is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.
From the Sky News Centre at 5, there's been a sensational development in the News of the World hacking story. This Sunday's edition will be the last in the paper's 168-year history. The news has been confirmed by News Corporation's James Murdoch in a letter to staff, and Labour MP Tom Watson has given us this reaction.
When you're losing tens of millions of pounds in advertising because companies are too embarrassed to put their wares in the paper, then it's really inevitable that that would happen. This is a victory for decent people up and down the land, and I say good riddance to the News of the World.
Mr. Murdoch says the allegations of phone hacking have been inhuman and have no place in the company. He's confirmed Colin Myler will edit the final edition of the paper and all revenue will go to good causes. Co-creator of The Independent, Andreas Whittam-Smith, says it's sensational news.
You have to understand what it implies. It implies giving up a very important brand name. The News of the World may be tarnished at the moment, but it's an ancient title. Everybody knows what it stands for. And suddenly, a line is drawn under it. It's extinguished. It's just astonishing.
In other news, two men have won their Belfast High Court appeal against a ruling that held them responsible for the Omagh bombing. 29 people died when a real IRA car bomb ripped through the market town in August 1998.
A very good afternoon on 93.2 FM here in Bristol and on bcfm.org.uk, wherever you're listening to us this Thursday afternoon, July the 7th, 2011. A very good afternoon. This is Andrew Parsonage with you on the South West's best radio station. This is Bristol Community FM on a sensational afternoon. What a day to be broadcasting to you today. So we have the usual mix of news, conversation and outstanding music as ever. I'm joined in the studio by Bristol's very own Mr. Music. If there's anything musical going on in this city, he's got his finger on the pulse. Clive Somerville, good afternoon to you, sir.
Good afternoon, and what news that was.
What news is, so we'll be talking about that in just a second's time, but let me just tell you, first of all, before we go into what's coming up today, our thanks to Finn for his show 4 to 5 every Thursday, which is a selection of sort of contemporary music and factoids.
Yes, animal factoids.
Thank you, Finn. Thank you, Rich and Dave, for that. So coming up between now and 7pm, it's one of the biggest stories of the year so far. It's just got bigger in the last half hour. We'll be asking whether public trust in newspapers has been shattered for good by the events this week. That coming up in just a few moments' time. After 6pm, the Bristol kids of today, who may become the top snappers of tomorrow. We have a local photography expert and Prince's Trust representative, plus her award-winning protege here in the studio to talk about the scheme putting disadvantaged young people back in the picture. And I know, Clive, you'll be taking the lead on that one.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, it'd be good to talk to them.
Looking forward to hearing about that. Plus, if that wasn't enough, Clive will be supplying three further low-cost options for the weekend, as well as casting his eye over the days of the other news. If there's any other news stories today, Clive.
There may just be one or two.
Maybe just one. But not forgetting also another great playlist with a slightly sort of rocky edge today. I'll explain why later on. And also our Guilty Drive anthem around about 20 to 7. An absolute belter, as ever.
Can't wait.
Now, don't forget, you can get in touch with the show if you want to talk about the things that we're talking about today. The text number, Clive, is... can you see it up there?
I can now. Yes, I've got my glasses on. 0752 880 2347.
And the good news is we can actually look at text and email this week. If you want to email us, it's studio@bcfm.org.uk, or go to the webpage bcfm.org.uk and leave us comments on there. So there we go, all the way through till 7pm tonight. But first of all, let's get back to the big story of the week, if not the year. And it's fair to say the media consider summer to be a quiet news period, but not anymore. Following the exposure of failed bankers and greedy politicians in recent years, the UK press is now being subjected to the same scrutiny following this week's allegations of hacking by the News of the World. It seems that celebrities are not the only fair game in town if the revelations of journalists tapping the phones of murdered children, dead soldiers' families and the relatives of terrorist victims are confirmed to be true. Although the News of the World has taken the brunt of the storm, and as you just heard in the news, it's to close after this weekend, Britain's newspaper industry in general now faces a long, dark night of the soul. So has the bond between the people and the messenger finally been destroyed for good? Well, there's who better to discuss this with and the fallout from this week's events and today's events other than Tony Gosling, who's a former Bristol branch chair and secretary of the National Union of Journalists and now on the NUJ Ethics Committee. And also BCFM listeners will know Tony from his Friday afternoon drive time shows. Tony, first of all, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Tony, first of all, your thoughts on hearing today's news?
Well, first of all, just a little correction there. Actually wasn't the journalists themselves that were doing this phone hacking largely. They were employing, with the sanction of their managers, the private investigators to do this work for them. So, yes, you can say that the journalists at the News of the World were complicit and the Sun were complicit in this, but the actual work was being done by private investigators, some of whom were ex-police. It's interesting that this has come up today because we've got a big announcement tomorrow, apparently by the Culture Secretary Jeremy Hunt, about whether or not Murdoch is going to be allowed to take over Sky B. So that's incredibly significant. But I would sort of... I'm polishing my nails on my chest here slightly because 2 years ago... No, not quite 2 years ago, a year and a half ago at the Arnold Feeney, our union's branch organised a talk, the Ben Lecture, which was actually done by Nick Davis. He gave us an hour and a half talk on this, almost all on this very topic of phone hacking, explaining to the audience at the Arnold Feeney how big this story was and how it was going to just grow and grow and grow, and we hadn't seen the last of it yet, and he was quite right, it seems. I think it's a bit unfair to blame journalists generally, because journalists have to fit in. I mean, journalists are employed. We don't own the transmitters. We don't own the newspaper, the printing machines, etc. We're employed in a certain role, and of course, if your face doesn't fit, then you won't last very long in there. Then what was really, I think, is going on is that the management are the people who are more to blame than individual journalists, because they create a culture whereby they put pressure on individual journalists. As we heard recently, there was one of the journalists at the News of the World who actually resigned. I think it was the Daily Star, who resigned because there was so much pressure being put on him to actually make up story, anti-Muslim stories, for example. And so, you know, you're caught between a rock and a hard place in a way. You want your job, but you don't necessarily want to compromise your values. And that's where things like the union comes in. I mean, the union has its own code of conduct, and we get quite a lot of complaints at the union under that code of conduct. So if you're being forced to do something it goes against your conscience, you know, I think every journalist who's employed, there should be a conscience clause in their contract which says that you don't have to do something which you're being asked to do by an editor or manager which you actually don't agree with.
But to the public, Tony, they won't see the difference between journalists and newspaper management. They'll just see the press in for better or worse. I mean, are you personally shocked? I know the revelations that have been coming out this week, the allegations that have been made.
I'm very rarely shocked by this kind of thing.
Even to this extent, the fact that if it's to be believed, the people whose phones have been hacked, is this a new low, Tony? Are you generally surprised by this?
No, it's nothing new about this, really, because it's been going on a long time, ever since Whopping, really, and Murdoch's takeover of the News of the World. I mean, if people remember back as far before the 80s, they'll know that actually the News of the World and the Sun actually used to be very different newspapers before they were bought out by Murdoch. And the same is to be said for the Times as well, and the Sunday Times. I mean, Murdoch, when he arrived on the scene, for example, one of the first things he did was to sack one of the best photojournalists in the world, Don McCullin, who's now retired, living in Somerset, from the Sunday Times. Don, who'd put himself in the way of bullets in Vietnam, in Northern Ireland, has got some of the best photographs. I mean, most photographers would agree. He's just one of the best photojournalists the world's ever seen. And Murdoch's approach to it was just to sack him. So you can see where he was coming from. Simon Regan, for example, who was a very good investigative journalist, he fell out with Murdoch almost immediately that Murdoch took these papers over. So this wasn't a commercial takeover. This was an ideological takeover, because Murdoch had very different things that he wanted to do with those newspapers. And I think it's fairly clear he wanted to use them for their political influence rather than simply to tell the truth to the public and get a good newspaper out there that was going to compete on a level playing field.
Do you think he's actually long mortally wounded by this? Do you think he'd be able to recover from this scandal if it's proved to be true?
On our show, we dealt with this story on the Friday Drive Time show about 3 or 4 months ago, and it was quite interesting to play out an interview with Murdoch from Fox News. Now, this is his US right-wing channel. Fox News interviewer was actually interviewing Rupert Murdoch, and it's interesting, of course, because we heard the news just now on the Sky News, which again is part of the Murdoch network. And the Murdoch actually refused to answer the question, and in fact threatened to go out of the studio if the guy didn't move on to a different question. So you can see how sensitive it is, and I'm very glad to see that there are journalists who work for Rupert Murdoch who are prepared to ask him difficult questions, but I've no idea whether that guy's still got his job.
Yeah. Let me just read you a quote from this is what Rupert Murdoch said. This is on the BBC website. In a statement to staff, Mr. Murdoch has said that the good things of the News of the World, that the good things that it does have been studded by behaviour that was wrong. Indeed, if recent allegations are true, it was inhuman and has no place in our company. And perhaps most interestingly, he said, and I quote here, the News of the World is in the business of holding others to account, but it failed when it came to itself. Now,
well, he's left that too late as far as I'm concerned. He should have been saying this a year ago.
Should he now be forced to step away or to be held to account in a court of law in this country?
I actually don't think, as a newspaper proprietor, Rupert Murdoch is fit to own any newspapers or any broadcasting channels in this country. That's just my own view. I would find it almost impossible to work in the sort of atmosphere that his newspapers... And the other thing I would say is that actually Sky News is quite good, but the only reason it's good is because it's got other news agencies like the BBC to compete with. If the BBC weren't there, I think we'd see Sky turning into something like Fox News in the United States or The Sun, that kind of thing. The other thing to remember is just the horrendous recent allegations, well, not allegations, clear evidence that has caused many advertisers to pull out. That is to say, the idea of paying private investigators to hack into the phones of dead soldiers and their families, paying private investigators to hack into the phones of the 7/7 victims. This is not only utterly immoral and unjustifiable, it's also a criminal offence. And this is something that's been going on, I'm afraid, with the connivance of the police, because there seems to be a rather too cosy relationship between the Metropolitan Police and Rupert Murdoch's empire.
Do you think that's why they've been slow to bring these hacking claims? It's been going on for about 3 or 4 years now, the investigation, hasn't it?
Yeah, it started off with the Royals. So I don't know if you remember, but the very first one was a Royal phone had been hacked. And I think what happened was that at that point, Murdoch and various other parts of News International hoped that just this one little case was going to disappear. Nick Davis, the journalist, Guardian journalist, was smart enough to realise that actually there was loads more mileage in this story, and that it was actually opening up a very, very important collusion, really, I think, in London. And let's face it, London is the centre of this country's media. The show we do here on Fridays includes national and international stories, but that's actually a rare thing. Almost all of our national and international news comes from London. So this is worrying to think, isn't it? I mean, I think it is anyway, that the Metropolitan Police and the biggest media owner, apart from the BBC, in London, were actually in each other's pockets, and money is changing hands backwards and forwards between them. In fact, one of the private investigators that they used was himself a former policeman who had been sacked for misconduct.
Yeah, we talk about the police involvement, but it's interesting also that the government, and David Cameron in particular, who, you know, obviously people are questioning his judgment about hiring Andy Coulson as his communications guy, but also it seems that the government have been reticent about condemning outright what's happened, and it also shows quite an uncozy alliance between, or rather an awkward alliance between Murdoch's or Murdoch's empire and the government of the day. And do you think it's got to the point where News Corp has got just too powerful, that it's got beyond itself?
I don't think it's just News Corp. I think the media is incredibly powerful. Actually, it's up to the press and the BBC largely to decide what the issues of the day are. There are quite important issues which the BBC decide they don't want to touch, they don't want to cover. For example, over the last week or so, there's been a flotilla of boats heading to Gaza, for example, from Greece. The BBC have not really covered that at all. And so what it means is that something which may be important news is not. And if you can see what I'm saying here, this also happens directly in the political sphere. So it's up to the big news organisations, which are all concentrated in London, all rather too friendly and cosy with each other. Yep. The other thing is they take a lot of their agenda from the same news wires. We're talking about a Press Association, we're talking about Reuters, Associated Press, Press Association news wires. A lot of the news that we see comes from these small news, you know, number of news wires, and so it's kind of concentrated in a few hands. And this really sets the agenda for national debate. I think it's moved far too much away from the media reflecting public opinion into the media, a little bit of arrogance, where the media actually try and force public opinion in certain directions.
Including the BBC in that.
Oh, absolutely, all the media. But Murdoch really, I think, very politicised bit of the media is the Telegraph, and the Telegraph's owned by the Barclay twins, who are tax exiles, and Brecker, they've got their own little island in the Channel Islands. And again, they push very much a political agenda through there. I mean, for example, the whole of the expenses scandal was a Telegraph operation. They hired, basically, they hired a former SAS major to get hold of all this information.
It did a good job, though, didn't
it? And what it did was actually distract attention from the bankers' bonuses. If we're looking at the amount of money that was involved with the expenses crisis, it actually cost more to investigate it than actually the amount of expenses which had been claimed. And, of course, MPs had been encouraged to overclaim on their expenses and told, well, this is politically better than actually giving you a pay rise, so claim a bit more on your expenses. And so there was a kind of entrapment of MPs, and the idea of that by the Telegraph was quite clearly to divert attention away from the excesses of the City of London, which is, you know, I have no compunction about saying has a great deal of influence on our political parties, the MPs, you know, and putting the blame onto the MPs. The MPs are our first line of defence against the city, you know, and the city right now, I'm afraid, hasn't got a very good name after the financial crisis. They're always asking us to trust us with the money, you know, because it's a private banking industry, and as far as we're concerned, they've made a mess of it, and it may be that the politicians are going to have to step in and nationalise the banks.
Okay, we're sort of straying away from the core subject here, but I'll come, it's a fair point, Tony. Clive, I just want to bring you in at this point. Tony actually mentioned the word trust there, which I think it boils down to ultimately between the public and the media. Do you think this trust has been irrevocably damaged, or do you think it's one of these things that eventually people will trust their newspapers again?
No, I think people will trust the newspapers again. There are certain loyalties that readers have towards certain newspapers, whatever your political part of the spectrum might be. What it will do, I think, is provide an excuse, if that's the right word, for perhaps a further clampdown on freedom of the press when this sort of thing is going on. I think certain institutions in our society are looking to always do that, and I think here's a perfect excuse to say, right, okay, there's this time that some of the media were clamped down on and given less privacy, less reason to actually go out and you know, find these stories in this kind of manner. So yes, unfortunately, I think it will damage the press and perhaps the relationship with its readers temporarily, but no, I don't see it being irrevocably damaged.
Can you see maybe the image of politicians and bankers rubbing their hands with glee, and maybe some celebrities at the misfortune of the news in the world that finally they've got their comeuppance? I think there'll be an element of schadenfreude here somewhere.
I think there'll be a lot of people rubbing their hands with glee, because of course Murdoch's completely changed the character of the newspapers and the TV stations he's taken over, and turned them into, well, I think one of the side stories to this really is that the quality of The Sun, for example, has gone right down, in my opinion, from when Murdoch took it over. It used to be at least have some decent investigative stories in it, and it had a quite a sort of positive moral side to it. Whereas nowadays, I'm afraid it's, you know, the whole paper, to me, I find it's now, you know, it's just become a comic, but it's quite a nasty comic. As you know, The Sun has been completely boycotted in Liverpool after there was inaccuracies printed the day after the Hillsborough disaster. And this kind of thing, what you've got here is rather too close, and again, a relationship with the police at Hillsborough. Rather too close. The Sun was basically just putting out the police line. It didn't bother to check its facts. So this is very dangerous territory. If a police and a newspaper, these two different elite institutions, are in collusion, and let's not forget that what happened at the News of the World and The Sun is a criminal offence. I mean, what you're saying, Clive, may be right, that they may use this as an excuse to clamp down, but why do they need an excuse to clamp down? We don't need a new law. The law is already there against this. And I think the police are in the dock here as well. Certainly the Metropolitan Police. And I think if you talk to detectives around the country, they will, many of them will say that the Metropolitan Police is a rather dangerous organisation. In fact, one of the heads of the drug squad actually said that the Metropolitan Police drug squad was the best organised criminal gang in the country. I can't remember the guy's name, but he wrote a book called The Filth, which was his memories of being a Metropolitan Police drug squad officer. And so I think you've got a far too cosy relationship. The press relies on the police for stories, and the police rely on the press for publicity. Say, for example, they're trying to catch somebody. The other thing, though, is that the police often will, I mean, this is something I've come across, will send lies to the press because they want to wrong foot a criminal of some sort. They may send out nonsense through the press. So that relationship is a very important one to get right, and if both of those institutions, the press and the police are elitist. We're in a very dangerous situation, as has happened here.
Okay, Tony, actually, we'd like to talk a little bit more about this and just to give us a flavour of what it's like to be a journalist, because you've been there, you still are. But what we'll do is we'll play a little bit of music just for the meantime. Tony, stick around for a few more minutes. We'll be talking about this huge subject in just about 2 or 3 minutes' time here on Thursday Drive Time. BCFM Thursday Drive Time. This is Andrew Parsonage with you, and also Clive Somerville, all the way through till 7 p.m. this evening on BCFM. Thank you for joining us. That was the Joy Formidable there, and a track called A Heavy Abacus. We're talking the biggest story of the day, one of the biggest stories of the year, in fact, which is just keeps on getting more sensational by the hour. And if you caught the news at 5 o'clock, you will know by now that the News of the World, after this weekend, will be no longer. The paper will have its last edition on Sunday, following allegations of hacking that seem to be plumbing new depths day in, day out. Joining us in the studio is fellow BCFM presenter and also NUJ, on the NUJ Ethics Committee, as well as being heavily involved in various aspects of journalism, is a journalist by trade, Tony Gosling. And Tony, just to follow on this is a fascinating subject, and I know somebody who's sort of strong opinions on this. So I want to quickly ask you about the B-Sky B decision. So for anyone listening who wonders what that's about, basically the government are about to decide upon Sky buying out their remaining sort of stake of British Sky Broadcasting. Obviously today's events will have a major bearing on that, and do you think it's going to hold it beneath the waterline, Tony?
Well, capitalism can only work, can't it, if there's proper competition. And the reason that the rules are set as they are on cross-media ownership is to make sure that we've got plurality in our media. And what happens if you've got cross-media ownership, like someone like Rupert Murdoch does, with, in other words, newspapers, radio and television, is that you can use the newspapers to plug the radio, exactly. And use the radio, yeah, to plug the television, use the television to plug your newspapers.
They feed off each other, don't they?
Yeah. And this can be extremely damaging to small people who are trying to get into the market. In fact, it can make it impossible. So this is why Jeremy Hunt, the Culture Secretary, is looking at this whole bid that Rupert Murdoch's making for BSkyB. Now, tomorrow he was due to announce the results of that bid, so that's why the timing is so incredible. And it seems amazing to me, apparently now he's got away with announcing that he's going to delay that for 3 months, so he's not going to tell us the result of the inquiry for another 3 months.
He's just going to wait for things to die down and then give it to Sky? Is that the plan?
It seems pretty obvious, doesn't it? I mean, obviously the Cameron government is very, very close to Murdoch and the News of the World, what with Andy Coulson being working for Murdoch.
Every government, Tony, is trying to get close to Murdoch just so that they can get the voters on side, surely.
They do, but this is much, much closer. What with Coulson, who was a former editor of the News of the World, actually working on the most important job in the run-up to the last general election, making sure that David Cameron was, or he was David Cameron's press secretary right through that time and up until recently when he resigned. I would imagine the reason he resigned is because it became clear that some of the hands-on stuff that Coulson was doing during this hacking inquiry were going to come out sooner or later, so they thought it's best to get him out of the way. It seems to me it's a kind of crisis disaster management, that it only seems as if when something is going to be made public, get it come out to the public, that that's when they act. And of course, if they had any integrity, they wouldn't have done these criminal activities in the first place. There is one side to all of this, and that is, if you've got a rather nasty management of the media, it may be that you have to do this kind of cheating and dirty tricks and criminal activity to actually get the content into your paper. I mean, I actually think that's it may be a big criticism of the Murdoch empire, but certainly with the News of the World, I wonder what that paper would have been like without all these exclusives. It probably wouldn't have been worth reading.
Because, I mean, the News of the World, to be fair, has over the years got out some exclusives that people might consider were helpful.
Yes, but it's how you do it that counts. Are you going to use criminal means?
Okay. Tony, just take us, if you like, into the world of a journalist, because you've been there yourself, and a lot of the comments this week, particularly from the hack in question, or the private detective, or whatever you want to call them, talk about the pressure that journalists are under to deliver that all-important scoop or that news story that's going to sell papers. This is endemic across newspapers, from the Evening Post to the News of the World, or is it just a few papers who are sort of practicing these dark arts?
No, I think it's not totally endemic. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on journalists journalists to come out with the goods. Usually, the temptation is to do too much cutting and pasting from press releases straight into the page.
That's very true. Yeah.
It might be that, for example, in the old days where you had a day to work on a story, to actually go and knock on doors, to make phone calls, and to actually get some real depth and detail into a story. Now you're given half an hour, and of course it doesn't necessarily give you enough time to do that story justice. A lot of this is to do with basically simply increasing dividends to shareholders, to increase profits, so you have less journalists working on more stories, filling up more pages, and that is a bit dispiriting. The other thing is, I think, in the industry, is it makes a lot of difference, the atmosphere in a newsroom. Some newsrooms you go into and it's sort of deathly silence with everybody sort of poured over there, and other newsrooms, and some I've worked at in the 90s, the BBC, what was Greater London Radio newsroom, was a great newsroom to work in. People would shout across the newsroom and everyone was a good sense of humour. People would come up with good headlines, well, not headlines for the radio, but, you know, good lines on stories for you, if they knew you were working on something, and there was a real sense of collaboration. So I think, that actually does have a big effect on what the public gets at the end of the day, is what kind of atmosphere there is in the newsroom. I think for this particular story, though, we must give the biggest pat on the back in the world to Nick Davies, who lives in Brighton, the journalist, freelance journalist, works for The Guardian, who's really persisted with this whole story. He came out with a book called Flat Earth News a couple of years ago.
Was it The Guardian who broke the story originally?
The Guardian has been pushing this all the way. Yeah, other papers have picked up on it, but I think without The Guardian, these names of all these people who had their phones hacked into would still be sitting in a filing cabinet in Scotland Yard, and no one would have known about it. So The Guardian has been the spearhead in getting this story out to the public, which is great to see. And also interesting, because The Guardian has a great history of its own. It's a national newspaper, but it's run in a quite collective fashion. In other words, it sounds incredible, but the editor is chosen, elected almost, from amongst the employees. They choose who they want to have as the editor. It's a very different style of paper. It was also started after the Peterloo massacre in Manchester as the Manchester Guardian, as a national newspaper coming from a regional city. So it wasn't under this sort of all-embracing umbrella of London News, you know, and it started with that whole attitude. Obviously, it's quite a left-wing newspaper. It's a little bit more left-field. It looks out for the underdog more than the other elitist press do. So, you know, doesn't come as a great surprise that The Guardian's been pushing this, and Nick Davies has done some fantastic stories over the years in there. There is other stories that haven't come out, though, that The Guardian lawyers have said, no, sorry, that could bring us down if we use that one, including all of the stuff to do with the police, and a book called The Untouchables, which was very thoroughly researched, but The Guardian said, look, we'd love to put extracts of this in the in the paper, but it's just too hot to handle. And this, a lot of this was to do with groups of police officers in the Metropolitan Police who had such a lot of money and such good barristers that even though there was evidence that they were corrupt, they couldn't actually be sacked, and that's why they called the book Untouchables. So that's another story that never actually made it out to the public.
Well, watch your space. Yeah, just quickly from both of you here, obviously the News of the World has met its demise. And I don't think there'll be a few people who'll be quite pleased about that. Are other newspapers going to follow suit? Can we see this similar impact on The Sun, for example? Do you think it'll come out that other papers have been involved in this kind of journalism as well?
Well, we'll see arrests, I imagine, I think, at last. This is one of the problems with all this, is the police, as I said, are in the dock too. We've got clear evidence of criminal activity where actually what the police have done is they have taken a little guy as this kind of scapegoat for this, the guy who was actually paid to do it, rather than, it's almost like, you imagine, Andrew, if you hire me as a hitman and I go out and kill somebody for you.
It's interesting,
right?
Thoughts, anyway.
You've got
right?
it in mind.
Actually, what the police are doing we can draw an analogy with this situation, is they've come and arrested me, but they're not interested in you. Yeah, so it's the person who's actually commissioned all this phone hacking is still walking the streets, even though that's a criminal activity. The police have decided to sort of just skirt around that. I think it looks to me as if, what with all the pressure coming from the House of Parliament, from MPs, and now the wider knowledge of the inactivity of the police investigation, that we are going to see arrests amongst people who were commissioning Glenn Mulcair and other private investigators to do this dirty work. And I would also say that, you know, you may think it's incredible that these networks can be created of secret networks, basically, of police and journalists and possibly customs officials getting private information and feeding them to the press for money. But there was an article, one of Nick Davis's most recent articles on the 8th of June in The Guardian, says the phone hacking scandal. Jonathan Rees obtained information using the dark arts. Years ago, Jonathan Rees became a Freemason. According to journalists and investigators who worked with him, he then exploited his link with the lodges to meet Masonic police officers who illegally sold him information which he peddled to Fleet Street. As one of Britain's most prolific merchants of secrets, Rees expanded his network of sources by recruiting, as his business partner, Sid Fillery, a detective sergeant from the Met. Fillery added more officers to their network. Rees also boasted of recruiting corrupt customs officers, a corrupt VAT inspector, and two corrupt bank employees. So you can see the sort of secrecy that goes with these Masonic lodges. It's almost the perfect place for this criminality to thrive.
Okay. All right, Tony. Thanks. Clive, just another quick thought from you. We'll come back to Tony in a second. But in terms of where the dominoes fall next, Clive, any thoughts?
Well, you know, a lot of people were disappointed, I think it's fair to say, that more people weren't prosecuted over the MP's expenses scandal, and I think now they're going to be looking for a lot more a lot more prosecutions on this one. And as Tony rightly says, it isn't about the private investigator alone. You know, he was commissioned to do a job. Who's the guy that was pushing the buttons?
Yeah, I mean, who will be buying the News of the World this Sunday? It's the last edition. Can we anticipate stockpiles in the news agents, or do you think people will still
be one to keep, wouldn't it? Yeah,
for souvenir edition.
Yeah.
But it's interesting though, because with all of this, ultimately we the public are complicit in this, because we still buy the papers, we keep the circulation going. If we had such moral outrage, we'd have stopped buying them years ago.
You have to say that part of the reason that this phone hacking has gone on is the pressure, as Tony sort of alluded to earlier, is the pressure to come up with more and more sensational stories. Where do we get the information from? Oh, I know, let's go and find out what the families of, you know, victims and terrorist victims and so on, that sort of thing, a feeling. How do we do that? Let's hack into their phones. That'd be a good idea, despite being completely illegal. So there is the pressure to sell newspapers, because circulations have gone down so much, not just in newspapers, but a lot of printed media, and they're trying to find a way of selling more newspapers by being more and more and more sensational.
Okay, Clive, thank you for that. I'm just going to come back to the hitman opposite me, Tony the Jackal Gosling. Tony, thanks for your thoughts there on what was a sensational story that the plot thickens by the minute. Just before we finish up here, Tony, just give us a heads up as to what's coming on Drive Time this time tomorrow.
Well, we've got Lib Dem cabinet member Councillor Guy Portney on tomorrow from 5 to 6 helping us review this week's news. I'm sure we'll mention this particular story at some
point. I'm just going to mention, mightn't it?
And we've got some investigative reports in the second half from 6 till 7. This is the week of the anniversary of the London bombings, and we've got a pretty sensational report by a employee of the police intelligence in Yorkshire who has been sacked because he doesn't believe that the four alleged bombers actually did it. He believes that the threat to London on the 7th of July 2005 came from a very, very different source. And he's an intelligence analyst, and he's been sacked for telling the police what they didn't want to hear. Also, Chris Shale's death at Glastonbury. Now, Christopher Shale was David Cameron's constituency chairman at Whitney in Oxfordshire, and he was the man responsible for deciding whether David Cameron should be allowed to stand as a Conservative MP for the next election. And just before he died at the Glastonbury Festival, the two or three days before, a leaked memo written by him had basically called the Conservative Party a bunch of spivs. What I've done is I've come across an expert on assassinations who believes that Chris Shale didn't die of natural causes at Glastonbury, and he believes that there's very strong evidence, and through his intelligence contacts, that actually Chris Shale was assassinated. And this is pretty sensational stuff. The reason being potentially that he had information which could be used to harm a central member of the government, obviously David Cameron in this case, and so that he was assassinated rather than just died in the toilet at Glastonbury.
It's just a sudden demise, assassination by Portaloo, but it's...
One of the strange things is that he actually was staying in a very luxurious Winnebago in the private area, and yet he was found in the public toilet. So if I was at Glastonbury, I wouldn't want to go and use those public toilets.
No, why was he there?
Okay. All right, Tony, well, look, thank you, Richard. Indeed. Thanks for joining us at short notice, but I'm sure you'll agree it is a sensational story, one of the biggest news stories of the year so far. So thank you very much indeed for joining us. Fine till 7 p.m. tomorrow evening, Tony Gosling's Dry Time Show. Always a listen, never a dull moment, Tony.
And the news of the world in the ownership of Rupert Murdoch has now run its course.
Okay, there you have it. Thank you, Tony.